I'm joined by Andrew Crust, who is music director of the Lima Symphony, also has a side gig in Vermont. Are you in Vermont now? Or are you in Vancouver, rather?
I'm actually in Vancouver at the moment, heading to Vermont next week, actually Ottawa next week, and then not too long before I'll be back in Ohio.
Well, let's talk about the upcoming season of the Lima Symphony. Is there like an overall theme or idea to the season?
I don't think so. I think we variety perhaps and diversity of musical styles and musical artists is something that we always strive for to really give our audience a broad taste of all different kinds of things. So we've got you see that right away next week with Tracy Silverman, the electric violinist and composer. And we've also got Mozart, so we really try and do it all because that's what our audiences want.
Well, let's go back to that October 19th concert with Tracy Silverman. He plays an electric violin, and most people think of that as like rock and roll or pop music, kind of influence. What are people going to expect the classical audience when they come see Tracy Silverman?
Well, I think music is music, and Tracy Silverman, he is the classical as he is the electric violin. He's really the preeminent player in the world. He plays on a five-string instrument, so it's got that viola lower C string, and on top of that, you can plug it in and create effects, right? And absolutely, sometimes he sounds like an electric guitar. Other times he sounds like an African kalimba or just a pure violin. There's so much that he can do, and I decided to bring him in to do some of his own works because he's such a great crossover artist who can combine his love for classical orchestral music and jazz with his own unique instrument. And it's really great stuff. It's minimalist, it's groovy. It reminds me of John Adams at a Phish concert. It's all kinds of colors and all kinds of interesting concepts there. And he's just a great guy, really tremendous musician.
Well, you've performed with him before, right?
Yes, I performed with him a world premiere of a new concerto by Roberto Sierra in Vermont. And sometimes you just meet people and you think, okay, I'm going to work with this person as often as I can because it's just a great connection. Now, of course, in this case, we have a guest conductor, so I'm unlucky this time that I won't get to work with Tracy.
I have a question about the description of the program. It says that people will enjoy Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, but this time with a happy ending. Can you shine some light on that?
Well, there are, this is not the entire ballet, and I think what our team meant by that was that the second suite ends actually in a beautiful C major. And in my mind, this is right after all of the angst of the scene, which is Romeo at the grave of Juliet, in which he's mourning the loss. He takes the poison himself, but I think the end product here is that the two families now have finally learned how to peacefully coexist, thanks to the sacrifice of their young children who fell in love. So that's, I think, what the happy ending here is. There's a little silver lining in this cloud.
Yeah, now talking about the whole season and what you do with Lima Symphony, I mean, do you have like a series of benchmarks for picking repertoire? How does that work for you?
Not exactly. We have our series that we want to fit everything into. I have some of my own internal requirements, especially for diversity of composers and for soloists, as I mentioned, not only ethnic diversity, gender diversity, but as I said, stylistic diversity. So I try and fit as many different styles as I can into the season while remaining at a very high artistic level. But we have our series that we continue, our Candlelight series, our Summer Pops concert, which this year went into a local prison. We brought the entire orchestra into the prison and performed with a inmate choir, which was incredible. But nothing too specific. It all just funnels into our general mission.
Can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the Lima Symphony Orchestra? You've been the music director for a few years now. I wonder if you can talk about that dynamic. I mean, how do you work with those musicians?
Absolutely. I believe I'm in my fifth season now, so it's certainly been a nice collaboration for a number of years, and it's gotten to the point, I think, where we know each other well. A lot of people in the orchestra are now a part of my programming process. I speak with all of the principals. We form sometimes a committee to discuss programming. What pieces should we be doing that we haven't done before? And sometimes that really makes a big difference. Last season or two seasons ago, we did the Handsome Second Symphony, and that was a recommendation of my concertmaster, Michael Huff. And so there are a lot of new players in the orchestra, a lot of young players, you know, coming straight out of college. There have been some vacancies, some retirements. And so the orchestra has shifted a lot in terms of who's in it. Nothing new there, of course, but just getting stronger and stronger. And I think we know each other very well at this point.
People maybe don't realize, but the role of the music director is much more than just getting on the stage and waving your arms and conducting the orchestra. Can you talk about some of the other stuff that Lima Symphony does that you're involved with?
Well, I'm very proud of our educational offerings. And for an orchestra in a city of our size, we really do more than almost anybody. We create brand new concerts and brand new scripts. For example, I created and wrote our family concert this year, which is all about animals and nature and ecology. And it's going to have large life-size animal puppets, elephants and giraffes and that kind of thing. Every week I'm in town, I go into the library and do an original program with live musicians called Mornings with the Maestro. And we go into the mental health ward of local hospitals to do a program called Healing Through Music. And we play music for people with no stigma. And so I think, especially in a town like Lima, in a state like Ohio, where classical music is not, you know, in people's blood like it is if they're born in Vienna, we have to be the ambassadors of music and show people what it is that they could be experiencing and bring music to them where they are, rather than assuming if you build it, they will come. And so we try and play in different communities and involve local groups in our performances as much as we can.
What's maybe one thing that audiences don't know about you in your role as the conductor?
That's a very good question. Perhaps that, you know, music director on a small staff does a lot of different things. You know, I work with the marketing team. I work with the development team. I work, of course, with our librarian, with our stage manager. It's a very collaborative effort. A lot of people think you show up for the rehearsals and you conduct and that's it. But everybody on our staff has unique skills and we all combine them into a big pot and work together and create something great.
So this may be old news and tell me if I'm off here, but you were name checked by Cate Blanchett in the movie Tar. You want to talk about that? Did they warn you that that was happening?
They did not warn me, and I looked it up. They don't have to warn you unless they're disparaging your character. So luckily, they didn't say anything bad about me, but that was just a pleasant surprise. I think in the end, if you've seen the film, it's a good thing I did not work with Lydia Tarr. I certainly did not expect it, but I was very pleased with the research that went into this film because a lot of classical music films, has nothing to do with the real industry, but this one was very heavily researched. Obviously, a little too heavily, considering my name made it in.
Let's talk about that October 19th concert again with violinist Tracy Silverman. I mean, we've talked about Prokofiev a little bit and his compositions. What is on the program?
So we have a first half, which is almost entirely Tracy Silverman's own compositions. But we're opening the season, which I love to do, with another living composer, with a female living composer, Alexandra Dubois, and her Fanfare for Orchestra. She actually lives in Vermont, and I'm going to be performing it there as well. And I heard this piece for the first time, and I thought, that's a great season opener. It's passionate, it's celebratory, and it's by someone who's alive and making work today. So that'll be kind of setting the tone for the whole season. I really like supporting living artists. But then in the second half, it's an all Soviet Russia era half. So we have Shostakovich's Festive Overture, as well as Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet Suite Number 2. And those composers lived in the same country at the same time. They lived under Stalin's reign. They struggled to fit into the requirements of his regime for artists. And because of all those shared experiences, I think their music really sounds alike in a lot of ways, although they certainly took different paths and how to navigate that Stalinist era. But they fit so well together stylistically, and it's really a celebration of the orchestra. They are both incredible orchestrators, and they give everybody a moment to shine. So this concert is varied. It might seem a little eclectic if you just look at it at surface value, but I promise you that the whole package is going to be incredibly entertaining and exciting.
Andrew Crust is music director of the Lima Symphony. Thank you so much, Andrew, for making time to talk to our listeners today.
Thank you, as always.